Good morning, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome into the Common Workspace Studios for this morning drive time hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. Daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Happy Monday to you. Hope for many it was a rainy, at least Sunday morning, and a good weekend. Otherwise, we're really getting that rain in. And anyway, I'm ready to get back in the saddle on this Monday for our Monday morning news hour. We're going to start off here in just a second with Louis Christensen, curator of the Twitter page Tucson Tomorrow. And then we'll have Ruben Navarrete, one of the most widely read Latino columnists in the country. We'll have him close out our show with an update and his thoughts on the decision by a federal judge in Texas on Friday that DACA is illegal and told the Biden administration to stop granting new applications. Quite a way to come out of the week into the weekend. It happened after we were in studio. We will catch up on that big news here on the program this morning. But here to get us going, I want to jump right in because there's always way more things to talk about than we have time. Louis Christensen, good morning to you. Welcome on the air.
Hey, Zach. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here, as always.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to get into a lot of stuff. You are one of our frequent contributors on this Monday morning news hour, where we try to talk with the people who are watching, writing about, and talking about the news of the day. You are a bit of a departure from a lot of the columnists and reporters and newspaper folks that we talk to on Mondays, a wide variety. You curate a Twitter page, Tucson Tomorrow, in your words, covering all things Tucson, an account full of tough love for the city we want to see improve, flourish, and grow. Oh, and one more thing, bear down. We're going to get to actually all of that. We're going to get to the bear down part, and we're going to get to the news part here, and I'm looking forward to it. Anything else I missed in the introduction of you, and we'll get going.
No, I think you know, if you could summarize it, my loyalty is to Tucson, and that's it. I don't have to talk to an editor. I don't have to answer to subscription numbers or anything. My loyalty is to this city, and so yeah, whatever that takes is what I'm out to do.
I love it. I love it. Well, you sent me three topics. We've got three segments together. I want to jump right in. In the latest bipartisan infrastructure bill, Louis, there's $66 million for Amtrak passenger rail. If that goes through, one of the routes that will be added is Tucson to Phoenix three times a day, and an additional daily route from Tucson to LA. And oddly enough, I didn't actually know this until I started preparing for the show, but there hasn't been passenger rail from Tucson to Phoenix since the 1990s. Mayor Romero here in Tucson and Mayor Kate Gallego in Phoenix are in support. Now, back to your Twitter feed, Louis. You polled your Twitter followers the other day and you asked if they would use the line if it was added. 31% of those who filled out the poll said yes regularly. 40% said yes every now and again. I consider that an overwhelming majority, and I would put myself in that overwhelming majority. I think this is great. I'm excited about it. Is there any reason, Louis, I shouldn't be excited about three times a day, I don't have to drive, fast rail from Phoenix to Tucson?
Okay, so there's a couple keywords in there that we got to point out. The number one thing, looking, you know, on some comments on my page as well as on Tim Steller's, he was the one who kind of wrote up the opinion piece in the Tucson Star, the Arizona Daily Star about the rail. Number one is fast. That's going to be the real ticket. If this thing isn't fast, if it takes 3 hours to get up to Phoenix, people probably aren't going to buy on. Maybe, you know, maybe they will, but it has to be fast. So you have to have that kind of value add is super important. Number two, it's like, is it good to connect the two cities? I think it is, but don't get your hopes up. I think when we think about trains and all that, it's so easy to think, oh, it's going to be so great for there to be a stop in Tucson and a stop in Phoenix. And then you ask people what they do in Phoenix, where they go, and it's like, this thing isn't going to Scottsdale Corridor and Kierland Commons up in Scottsdale. You know, this thing it might not go straight to downtown. Like, we don't know where that stop is going to be on the other end. And so you have to ask yourself, are you going to hop on a bus in Phoenix to go to where you need to be? The train, you know, it sounds stupid to say it out loud, but the train is not going to go directly to the door of your brother-in-law's house that you guys visit once a week or once every other week, you know? So you kind of have to be ready for the answer on the other end, which is actually one of the reasons why I think it's super exciting for Tucson, is because we're kind of have a jump start on some of the key destinations having rail going there. So if we can get straight into downtown, which would just be smart for Tucson to do and super possible because of, you know, how our city's set up with the I-10, all of a sudden someone could get down here from Phoenix, hop off the rail, go see a concert, go out to dinner, swing by a U of A, you know, football, basketball game. You know, on that note, whoever decided to not put our street train, I said this to you before, whoever decided to put the SunTran link on the opposite side of the campus as two of the biggest revenue generators in our city, the football stadium and the basketball stadium, they should be tarred and feathered. Like, we would already be in the black if we had the rail go right by there, I think. But anyway, so on the receiving end, Tucson is super set for it. I think it's going to be really great. But going up to Phoenix, there is that question of where is it stopping for people? And will the excitement continue when they find out that it's going to, you know, the south side of downtown Phoenix, as opposed to, like I said, like, you know, Arcadia or Scottsdale or something like that, where they might be traveling up there to go to Phoenix to do their shopping, to do their eating, to do whatever they're going to do.
Yeah, that's an interesting point there, Louis. Talk to me about the Tucson to LA daily route. Again, this is if everything goes through. Our two mayors I just mentioned are really pushing for it. $66 billion built into this bipartisan infrastructure bill for Amtrak. Of course, a big deal for President Joe Biden. Tucson to LA. We've been talking Tucson to Phoenix, but talk to me about Tucson to LA. Do you get excited about that as well?
You know, as far as, like, I work in tourism. As far as the tourism side, I really wish it would go Tucson to San Diego, seeing that San Diego and L.A. is already connected and they're going to see more investment there as well. But from a business economic development side and the potential to really connect, you know, Tucson to a major economic development hub, L.A., it could be super exciting. I don't think a lot of Tucsonans have a personal connection, or at least as much, with the city of L.A. as they do with San Diego. I don't know if you've walked around San Diego during rodeo week, but you see more, you know, U of A hats there than ASU hats in Phoenix. So it's a little bit of a bummer on that side. But man, if we could connect, you know, the startup community here in Tucson with L.A. direct shot, that'd be super exciting.
Absolutely. You sent me a note, and I want to close on this. We've got about a minute and a half, and then I want to go to break because there's so much to talk about here with you. Intercity investment versus metro investment in the context of this Amtrak discussion. What did you mean by that?
Yeah, so like it's kind of I mentioned it in there. Does the train go to where you want it to go? A lot of people will travel, you know, like when they take public transit, when they take at a train, they're going to be in a different city. They're probably going to be on vacation. They're seeing the tourist spots. And a lot of those cities, either they directly put those stops there on purpose because it's right by Wrigley Field or right by, you know, the cathedral in London or something like that. It's already built there, or it's the opposite. Something got built around the existing train system. So Phoenix doesn't quite have that. Tucson's working on it, but there is, for it to really work, for the train system to really work, both cities have to invest in inside their own city limits, their metro limits, public transit, so it's better. Because, again, if you take the train up to Phoenix and you're super excited about the high-speed train, and you get there and you have to hop on a bus, and the bus system is terrible, and you don't like it, then the train becomes irrelevant. Because, yeah, sure, you got to Phoenix, but now what? Are you really going to hire a $50 Uber when you could have driven up there on, you know, maybe 20, 30 bucks of gas? Maybe. So, again, super, super great, but we really have to go either 100% all in, let's go for it, or not at all. This is not something that you can kind of half-bake and hope it works. I think Tucson's in a better spot. We're a much, much smaller community as far as the size goes, so one transit line hits a larger majority of the, you know, per city capita than what would happen up in Phoenix. But that's my biggest worry is, great, we're connected to cities, but, you know, the inside the city transit is still not favorable. So why would I go?
We're with Louis Christensen this morning for our Monday Morning News Hour, one of our regular contributors on these Mondays, where we talk to the people who are watching the news, writing about the news, talking about the news. He curates the Twitter page Tucson Tomorrow, covering all things Tucson. We're talking Amtrak. What happens if that $66 billion for Amtrak goes through and a route is added for three times a day between Tucson and Phoenix? When we come back, we'll talk Midtown and eventually talk Arizona football before all is said and done with Louis Christensen. We'll be right back.
The next generation of talk. Tipping Point with Zach Gentzer, 1030, The Voice.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429. Equal housing opportunity.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business.
When looking at retirement planning, conventional thinking asks, how do I get a higher return? Should I take on more risk or is there a better product? Jason Robinson and his team at MassMutual focuses on the overall strategy first. He and his team of advisors have the tools necessary to measure the proper balance of investments and actuarial science for the best path possible for the highest retirement income. Call Jason and his team at 520-274-3749 to have them run through an analysis at no cost to see how much more efficient you can be, and tell them Zach sent you over.
The Men in Black are back. FC Tucson is our city's own professional soccer team, featuring talent from around the country and the world. They're ready to get back to business and a winning season for Tucson fans. Each one of the 14 home games this season will be uniquely curated and feature the sights, smells, and sounds of Tucson, but with the intensity of a playoff berth at Keno Stadium. Tickets now on sale. Head to fctucson.com to get yours for an exciting season of high-flying football. fctucson.com.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyiloveWhereILive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Trusted local news and talk. 1030, The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona, here in the Common Workspace Studios. Tipping Point with Zach Gentzer here on 1030 The Voice. It's our Monday Morning News Hour as we talk about the issues of the day coming out of the weekend with the people who are writing about, tweeting about, talking about, looking at the news. We talk to them to make sense of what's going on. Louis Christensen is my guest this morning, curator of the Twitter page Tucson tomorrow, covering all things Tucson. We talked about Amtrak in the first segment. I want to go a little bit east with you, Louis, here in the city of Tucson. You were talking about intercity and metro travel, and so Amtrak rolls into downtown. That's a good thing for Tucson. And then we've got this thing called the Sunshine Mile, which is starting to take shape, which is a node out of downtown Tucson that will have bus rapid transit, and we'll try to connect the downtown with the midtown and to some regard, east side. What is the future of Tucson's midtown? What is the future of Tucson's midtown that you'd like to see?
Yeah, I mean, it's a unique place. I've had a lot of friends and family from all over the country come here and be like, this is interesting. Like, it's very much the same. It's very much homogenous across all of midtown. But it's all just like sprawl, right? I mean, if you were to look at Tucson in the 1940s versus the Tucson in 1960s after all these houses were built, it would look unrecognizable. I mean, the amount of sprawl that happened across, horizontally across the city is astounding. It's part of why, I always joke, like, six stories is a tower in Tucson, right? Like, it's in the news, you'll see it written like, five-story tower getting built in Midtown, because that's how it feels, because you can see the mountains all the way on 22nd Street. So it's a unique place. I think I mentioned it last time, just kind of as an aside, the city, like the island of Manhattan, the entire island would fit in Midtown between Grant and Broadway, between I-10 and Pantano. So when we're talking about walkability and public transit, first off, we have to have an honest conversation about that, because it's not scalable throughout Midtown. I did a poll a couple weeks ago. How far is too far to walk? Like, how far would you walk to at a restaurant to go, pick up a couple of groceries, just a little run out, grab a coffee? The number one response was somewhere between half a mile and a mile, with the second response being between a quarter mile and a half mile. Sounds like, oh, that's a pretty decent distance. But then when you actually overlay that over the top of Tucson, it's like the majority of people would feel comfortable walking from Campbell and Speedway to like maybe Tucson and Speedway, which is like the next major light intersection. And so that presents a really unique challenge when we're trying to move more and more people off of the road and onto, walking and cycling and all that. So it presents a challenge. I think, kind of like what I mentioned in the first segment there, where in Europe, everything's built around nodes, not really thoroughfares, where if you hop onto a train, you go to the next node, and then everything's there. And you hop on a train, you go to the next node. So while Sunshine Mile is really, really great because it's such a small area, someone could feel comfortable walking from one side to the other, we really have to think about nodes in Midtown Tucson and not necessarily thoroughfares. I feel super great walking out of my neighborhood, walking about a quarter mile down to grab tacos. I'm probably not going to walk a mile and a half or 2 miles down Grand to go to something, even how great it is. We're raised in a car society, especially out here in the West. I'm going to hop in my car and take that drive instead. So we really have to focus on maybe not the major intersections, but intersections along the way. Right. A really great example of this would be Time Market, in the West University neighborhood, and Flora's Market Run. There on Country, is it Country Club? Yeah, Country Club and Sixth, where you have it's in the middle of a neighborhood, and it pulls everyone to that node, so they're not having to hop in a car and drive to go to a different coffee shop instead.
Right. I think it was interesting, Louis, when we talk about this either offline or on the air, and I think this is where often sometimes you want to go or you subtly remark on, is that Tucson is a town that likes to talk about sustainability and walkability and complete streets and sidewalk friendliness and pedestrian friendliness. But when it comes to making the policy and political and zoning decisions to get there, we go, no, not for me. Do that somewhere else. And it is fascinating to me that a city, that a town that is so focused on key issues like that when it comes to the decision making around it. And here's the tough love part, right, Louis? This is what you do on Tucson tomorrow, is you can't talk about walkability and then when walkability is created, we say no. Or when there is questions of height or density, when we talk about multimodal transportation, this is going to have to, in to some respect, shift how our neighborhoods look and feel and work. And if we don't want our community to look like that, let's stop talking about it. Let's go build highways. Let's be car-centric. Let's become Phoenix and not worry about highways. Let's go build. But what we value is not matched by our policy and our politics. I don't know how to bridge that divide, to be honest.
Yeah, it's a tough one, man. I mean, do you really want it? And everyone's going to say, yeah, of course we do. Of course we want walkability. Of course we want X, Y, Z. You know, we should get rid of cars. And it's like, okay, great, here's what it'll take. And it's like, oh, no, well, I don't want that. That's the exact opposite of what I mean. And 90% of the time, it's because it doesn't benefit them, right? Like, we've all been a little bitter at the street next to our route getting the new pavement, you know? When everyone thinks, oh, we should invest in infrastructure, they think my infrastructure, not the city's. When we think, oh, we do need more walkable streets, and I honestly think in Tucson especially, we should stop talking walkability and like bicycling ability. It's not as nice, but like the distances that we're going to have to drive or commutes and the heat that we have to deal with a couple months of the year, I think bikes are the way to go. And it's also like on brand with Tucson, just as a side note. But it is funny when we talk about that. It's like, okay, great. Let's be more walkable. Let's take more people off the streets. Oh, I have a great idea. We have 40,000 students who have to drive into campus every single day. Why don't we move them onto campus? Oh, yeah, that's awesome. Let's do that. Like, they'll make it so much more green, and it'll take traffic off the streets. And then people complain about how ugly the towers are on West Campus, right? But it's the most brilliant walkable sustainability move ever. And so you gotta somehow communicate. And maybe it's like we got to sell the goal and not the idea instead. The goal should be putting a bunch of kids on campus. Well, what is that going to require? It's going to require towers. Okay, because that'll make it more sustainable. Got it. Like, we almost have to work backwards as opposed to just, like, you know, slapping the word sustainable on a landfill and calling it a day. I just say that.
Louis, I want to, before we go to break, I don't know if I can actually have our caller on because time is short, but caller Al mentioned that with downtown development, it doesn't include East Side or other areas of town. And any quick thoughts on that? I think the Sunshine Mile, which is heading east, which is taking downtown development and connecting it to the East Side, is a step in that direction. 1 minute, Louis, any thoughts on that question? Ooh, Thank you, Al, for leaving that.
That is a really great point. So first off, Rio Nuevo, which is responsible for kind of the you know funding side of why downtown is coming back or has come back, that stretches all the way down to Park Place along Broadway. So that entire corridor there could become a really great stretch of redevelopment and businesses moving in and all of that. I 1,000% agree. Like I don't like the idea of us 100% pouring all of our money into one urban node because it takes one or two bad things like COVID to happen, and then the whole place falls apart and it fills with crime and bad things that are happening down there if you haven't been down there recently. I'm a much bigger believer in spread it out and the nodes around town. For walkability to work, you need to have a starting point and an ending point that people are wanting to stay in and wanting to go to, and we don't have that yet. We definitely need it. I would love to see stuff pop up around like the, you know, yep, Craycroft and Broadway area.
Louis, when we come back, we're going to talk Arizona football, our last segment together after bottom of the hour news. Don't go anywhere.
Hey there, Ari here with the Marinas team at Nova Home Loans. We share Zach's passion on Tipping Point of shaping yours and our community's best possible future. If that looks like purchasing a home in 2021, we want to be your partner in choosing the program that is the best possible decision for your financial and family goals. Call me at 878-7518 and let me know you heard us on Tipping Point to get started.
Ariel Ari Barrera, NMLS ID, 1982127. Nova Home Loans, NMLS number 3087, BK0902429, Equal Housing Opportunity.
In 1994, the University of Arizona took the bold step of acquiring an industrial park in southeastern Pima County and transforming it into a university research park. With over 25 years of success, Tech Parks Arizona continues to advance innovation. Whether it's 40 startups at the University of Arizona Center for Innovation or the new tech park at the Bridges that just broke ground, they are integral in shaping the future of Southern Arizona. Tech Parks Arizona, moving innovation at the speed of business. You love Decibel Coffee Works, the coffee of Tipping Point and the Yenser household, for their quality roasted coffee and beans. Now they're giving you even more reasons. Open now, the Scratch Kitchen at the MSA Annex will provide quick and easy breakfast and lunch with vegetarian and vegan options available to enjoy with your drink. Visit the MSA Annex right off the I-10 and Cushing to be one of the first to try. 267 South Avenida del Convento.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
This is The Voice, 1030, Tucson's trusted news and talk.
Tucson and Southern Arizona, happy Monday to you. Welcome back into the Common Workspace Studios here for this Drive Time Hour of Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on 1030 The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. We're on for this Monday morning news hour with Louis Christensen, the curator of the Twitter page Tucson Tomorrow. Go follow that on Twitter if you haven't already, covering all things hashtag Tucson, an account full of tough love for this city we want to see improve, flourish, and grow. Oh, and one more thing, bear down. And Louis, we're going to do that one more thing here in this bit of a shorter third segment here. We're going to talk Arizona football. Louis, the team has heard from Teddy Bruschi, Rob Gronkowski, Steve Kerr, Pete Carroll, and latest Jim Caldwell, just a few names here. We're a matter of weeks away from the season starting. I watched the video of Jim Caldwell. He came in and talked to the players, and I was bought in, man. Should we be getting excited? Do we have every right to get excited about what could happen on the field? We'll give it 2 or 3 years. Right, Louis? I'm excited about what Fish is starting to build there that we can watch on social media.
Yeah, no, well, first off, if a coach gets fired, it's because things are going badly. And so we have to give Fish a little bit of like grace this first year. You're inheriting a bad thing when your coach gets fired. And so what he's done in the meantime, I mean, there are people who haven't even gone to a practice yet to see the team, and they are super fired up. Word just came out, I think, like a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, that we're going to kind of start getting rid of the disgusting, horrible uniforms that we've been forced with, has been forced upon us by Nike, who I think was just trying to submarine our team for Oregon. We're going to go back to a more traditional Desert Swarm era look. You've been seeing that a lot if you've been keeping track with some of the recruits that are coming in and through the campus. And, man, just the glowing reviews that we've been getting from recruits who have, you know, a couple of them have decommitted elsewhere to come here. So, man, like, you are 100% right. You can be excited about this football season.
Yeah, and just, again, I name-dropped a bunch of those names, but I guess this is where Jed Fish's NFL connections come into play. Of course, Jim Caldwell is a two-time Super Bowl champion coach. And, you know, just to see these young men getting the access to some of these big names, and not just, you know, big names on their own, but big names connected to the U of A football program, Teddy Bruschi, Rob Gronkowski, Steve Kerr, you know, in terms of basketball and that connection. I mean, just crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's super important to point out, where we kind of forget about it as the fan base. But if you look at it as if the football program was just another degree that a kid was getting, you go to the school that's going to get you the job, right? You pick U of A because of XYZ degree, right? They have the best in the country. You fly, you know, out to Michigan because they have XYZ best degrees. The same thing happens with our sports programs. You pick U of A basketball because Sean Miller had a really great track record of getting guys in the first round. You pick, they haven't been, but we need to start having kids pick U of A football because it means an NFL an NFL career, right? That's the nuts and bolts of it. And so if you can show recruits these star names, the relevant star names, and have them show up to your program and like get have them be excited about the program where they're not like counting down the minutes to their next flight out at a boring, you know, like fundraising dinner, you're going to start getting kids who are NFL talent, right, in the future. And that's really what we need here. That's the missing piece, is getting kids from U of A into playing roles in the NFL. And there's a chicken and egg thing there, right? You need to have good enough recruits to get into the NFL in the first place, because even if you're a great football player, man, that's a hard thing to get into the NFL, right, and stay in the NFL. And then, you know, you obviously have to have the type of program that can attract that. So it's a little bit of a chicken and an egg. But the one thing, there's only one thing that we can control as a fan base. One thing. And that's the noise and excitement in the stadium. That's it. That's the only, like, we can complain on Twitter. We can call into the sports radio shows and complain about our head coaches and all that. But if you're a recruit showing up and you're being sold, like, hey, this is a really fun place, we love football here, and then the stadium's empty, and then you go up to ASU and the stadium's full, which one are you going to pick? It's going to be so easy to go with ASU over U of A. And so we're in a really unique predicament where the only thing we have right now with the Fish era is excitement. And I'm really pumped that that's the only thing that we have, because that can translate into a really solid recruiting class next year.
Right.
The only thing we really had with someone was his helicopter and his, you know, gifts that he would always post when he got a recruit.
Right. September 4th, Louis Christensen, is the first game of the season. It won't be in Tucson. It'll be at BYU. The first game here at home will be September 11th against San Diego State. I'm with you, Louis. All we have now is excitement. I think in terms of brand and excitement, Jed Fish is doing everything right. Games have to be won. I give him grace for a year or two, maybe longer. I think it's a rebuild. Let's get nuts and bolts, Louis. Off the top of your head, do you have a prediction what our win-loss record's going to be
at
U of A football? Oh, come on. Come on. This is why we do this, Louis.
Oh, man. I mean,
but you're not see.
I know. I need to really do a deep dive. I think we've got a couple of good games in us. I think it's odd to say, but I think the Territorial Cup has the best shot of us winning, just because, again, all we have is excitement, right? That's it. I think BYU beats us. They're a really, really great program. I think we might have a shot against San Diego State. Northern Arizona, that's always a win.
Oregon, UCLA, Washington. Colorado, Washington, USC. That's a five-game stretch you don't want to play with. I mean, that's nasty. It's nasty.
Yeah, that's a tough stretch.
Yeah.
And, you know, like, let's be honest. Like, USC is going to be ranked super high at the beginning of the season because ESPN loves them for some reason still. And then they're going to fall apart by the middle of the season. So as long as we kind of start their fall apart, then we wrap up. I mean, man, what a schedule. Even Utah, I mean, later in the season. So it's going to be a tough road ahead for us. But, again, we've got to get that excitement up. We've got to get people out. You know, all that pent-up energy that we couldn't go to games last year. Like, get out and prove it. Like, if you're going to be one of those people who complains that you can't buy a ticket and go to a sporting event, and then you don't go to the sporting event when it reopens, like, who are you? Come on. Like, shut up. Like, put your money where your mouth is. So that's my big thing. Let's bear down. Let's get out there. The only thing we can control is the excitement and energy in that stadium. And so if you want to be a good U of A fan, stop calling in and complaining to radio shows. Start showing up and cheering. And, you know, maybe the kids hear you, and maybe it gets more excitement. Like, football is a game of aggression and adrenaline and just pumped up, like, war chant energy. And if the stadium doesn't have that, then they're not going to have that fight on the field. We got to stop this whole, well, when you put a good product on the field, then I'll show up. Like, never going to happen. Like, show up, don't be that guy, don't be that gal, and cheer on our boys. Like, they're fighting hard for a better program for us, so we got to do the same for them.
I'll let Mr. Fish know after the show, Louis, where to send that check. Thank you for that pump up. Louis Christensen, curator of the Twitter page Tucson Tomorrow, covering all things Tucson. Oh, and one more thing, bear down. We covered it all here on our Monday morning news hour. Louis, thanks for coming on here on a Monday, getting us into the week. Appreciate it. Go follow Tucson Tomorrow. And Louis, in the meantime, we'll see you next month.
Yeah, bear down, everybody.
All right, thanks, man. Ruben Alvarate, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country, is on in just a moment here to close our show out. His thoughts on the decision by a federal judge in Texas on Friday that DACA is illegal. He told the Biden administration to stop granting new applications. We'll debrief that Friday decision on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
Miss a show? Check out the podcast at kvoi.com.
Why I love where I live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Like so many businesses, they had to make changes to their hours and operations during COVID-19. But I'm so excited to announce that they are now reopened for regular hours. Go to whyilovewhereilive.com right now to see all the new products and offerings and plan a visit to their location at the MSA Annex on Cushing off the I-10 and Avenida del Convento. Why do you love where you live?
Our beautiful daughter Ashley was only 12 years old when a distracted driver went through the light and ran into our van. When an email comes over your phone or a phone call or voicemail, it's not worth it.
Life is more important than your phone's beep. Stop the distracted driving, Arizona, please. Sponsored by the Arizona Chapter National Safety Council and the Governor's Office of Highway Safety, aired in cooperation with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
It's a great way to start your day. Hi, it's Hugh Hewitt. Join me 10 to noon weekdays on 1030 The Voice for the Hugh Hewitt Show. I'll have the news you must have, the analysis you need, great interviews with today's top newsmakers, and we'll toss in a great healthy dose of good humor and compelling conversation to get you going. Let's start the day together with the Hugh Hewitt Show.
News from inside the Beltway. The Hugh Hewitt Show. Weekday mornings from 10 to noon on 1030 The Voice. Trusted local news and talk.
When you manage your money with a credit union, you're taking true ownership of your finances and how your money impacts the community. Stop letting banking just happen to you. Bring your money home to Vantage West, federally insured by NCUA.
Tucson's source for trusted news and talk, 1030, The Voice.
We're back, Tucson, and all of Southern Arizona here for our Monday morning news hour on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser here in the Common Workspace Studios on 1030, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We just wrapped up with Louis Christensen, curator of the Twitter page Tucson Tomorrow. We now turn to our final guest here, someone who is watching, writing about, talking about, and reporting on the news of the day, Ruben Navarrete, the most widely read Latino columnist in the country, a frequent contributor to the Washington Post, USA Today, Daily Beast, and has appeared on Fox and CNN, and the resume goes on, but always grateful to have Ruben on. Ruben, we left studio on Friday, and after that, a federal judge in Texas ruled that DACA is illegal and told the Biden administration to stop granting new applications. His ruling did not impact those who are currently DACA recipients who have the two-year renewable work permits, but a big end-of-the-week ruling took some folks by surprise. What's your read on this, Ruben Navarrete?
Zach, good to be with you again. So I've got my brain works in threes. So I've got three things on this judge's ruling. The first one is we've done this before. Deja vu. We've had at least three different federal judges say the exact same thing about DACA. Some others have disagreed, but it's a very popular notion in legal circles to say that the executive branch does not have the power to decide that there's a group of people out here who should not be subjected to immigration laws and deported. That is something best done by Congress, and that the president, no matter who the president is, that president does not have the right to usurp that authority. That is the popular view. I also think it's the wrong view. I think it's the wrong view legally, because if police departments have the right to enforce a given law, they have the right not to enforce a given law. Let's say they decide not to enforce jaywalking laws or other misdemeanors. And since the president and the executive branch has the discretion to enforce the law, they must also have the discretion not to enforce certain laws. Also, I think it's really tricky, Zach, for Republicans to talk. That Republicans and Democrats have a habit of talking themselves into pretzels. You know, never quote back a politician on Friday what they said on Monday. They hate that because they often don't match. And for Republicans, if Barack Obama did not have the power to create DACA from the executive branch, then President Donald Trump did not have the power to end DACA from the executive branch. And if a Democratic president does not have the power through the executive branch to do things unilaterally that Congress does not do, then George W. Bush, as a Republican, did not have the power to pass like 14,000 executive orders after 9/11 and vastly expand the power of the executive branch. So here's how politics works. When I'm in power as the president, no matter what party I'm in, I'm going to make the argument that the executive branch is all powerful. But when you, Zach, are in power, I'm going to make the opposite argument. I'm going to say that you have no power at all. And so I'm elected again, and then I'm going to make the opposite argument again. So that's how we roll, and that's how politics rolls. The last point I'll make on this is that it's precarious, because even though I think the politics is hokey and the legal decision is false, I'm not a fan of DACA. I think DACA is a huge mistake. I think DACA is a con game that was created by Democrats. Democrats have perfected the art of fooling Latinos, gullible Latinos, into thinking that they're somehow in our corner, but they're not. And what DACA did basically was trick 600,000 undocumented young people to turn themselves in to immigration authorities, to hand over their fingerprints and their home addresses and where mama lives, and get photographed in return for a two-year renewable visa so they could work. But they always know where the DACA people are, and they can arrest them and deport them anytime they want. So this was always a Democratic shenanigan. It's not worth preserving. If they want to do away with DACA, I say good riddance.
I want to circle back on that. There's two points you brought up that I want to talk about. There's some interesting polling, Ruben, on how Arizonans view DACA. But a 5-4 Supreme Court decision in the Donald Trump era, where the Trump administration really took DACA to court, Justice John Roberts, and I think you wrote about this, Ruben, back in 2020, was the swing vote, and acknowledged that the Trump administration had the power to use its executive authority to end the program, because it was created by executive authority in the first place by the Obama administration. What bothered, and I think this is how you addressed it in an article that you wrote back in 2020, Ruben, that Chief Justice John Roberts was concerned that the president didn't end the program in the right way by considering alternatives and weighing the harm to participants. So with all that in mind, where do things go from here, right? We're talking about the Friday decision by a federal judge in Texas. What happens now on Monday? Anything?
Yeah, so a couple things. First of all, Biden has said he's going to appeal this decision, just like they appeal all decisions that have gone this way. And it may well be that the Court of Appeals sides with DACA and says the lower court was wrong. And it may be ultimately up to the U.S. Supreme Court to take another whack at this piñata, like they did in 2020. But we can expect them to sort of parse this out a bit, like John Roberts did, and basically say, look, on the one hand, we're not going to invalidate DACA. Anybody who's currently enrolled in DACA, they get to stay in DACA. But, you know, we're not going to take any further applications for new people to come into DACA. And maybe, like Robert said, the president erred in not communicating this correctly. President Trump may have. It's a procedural issue, and that's fine. We sometimes see that, whereby they don't want to throw the whole thing out, but they look for a technicality and say, "Well, this is really the problem." In fact, this latest judge in Texas said the same thing. He said the problem with DACA was that it did not inform Congress ahead of time of what Barack Obama intended to do. So they really kind of hang it on that. But in terms of your question, you know, legally they're going to appeal it.
politically, it's even more interesting because now there's a lot of pressure on Biden to do something politically about it. Biden has sent to Congress a comprehensive immigration reform bill that was really a formality. He's not pushing it. He's not putting any elbow grease behind it the way he has infrastructure. This is a low priority. The Biden administration doesn't care about immigration reform because it's too complicated. In order for the Biden administration to tackle immigration reform, it would have to referee a civil war within its party with Democrats, and that's the unions, organized labor, that wants less immigration, and Latinos that want more immigration. I have three kids, Zach. I don't like refereeing fights between my kids. Likewise, Democrats don't want to referee fights between Latinos and organized labor. So they have no desire to push this bill, but the politics of this ruling is forcing them to confront that chore and actually try to pass this bill.
Yeah, it's interesting how you put that last 30 seconds, right? Because this is this seems to be a well-known cycle of politics, is that new presidents really get just a matter of months to push one big thing through. You have enough of a window before the midterms to say this is my number one priority. And, you know, for President Obama, it was health care. I'd say for President Trump, it was tax reform. You get one crack at it. You get one shot at one thing. And I think that's an interesting point that you brought up. I want to bring this home, as I try to do. Ruben Navarrete is with us, one of the most widely read Latino columnists in the country. You'll see him on Washington Post, Daily Beast, USA Today, sometimes CNN and Fox. And his new podcast, or newish podcast, Ruben in the Center, really good information on that. I want to bring this home to Arizona, Ruben. Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, of course, DACA, we've been saying the acronym. I wanted to read it out in full. Arizonans, in probably the widest, largest, most comprehensive Gallup poll of Arizonans on a variety of issues within the last 12 months. On DACA, the vast majority of Arizonans, Republicans, Democrats, Independents together, say that they support a pathway to citizenship. You talked about how DACA is this renewing two-year cycle that just keeps going and going and going. The vast majority of Arizonans want a pathway to citizenship. These are childhood arrivals. They're here. Let's clean it up. Let's wrap it up. It's done. Let's welcome them here. Is that the right answer in your mind? Are Arizonans, we're on an Arizona show, do Arizonans have it right?
Yeah. I think Arizonans famously get immigration terribly wrong, as they did with SB 1070, and they get it famously right, as they seem to do in this poll. And certainly when I've been down in southern Arizona, it's a different world than in Maricopa County, but there are plenty of people in Arizona who are very, they understand the comity, the C-O-M-I-T-Y, of the relationship between Latinos and Anglo-Arizonans going back, you know, many generations. And so there is a lot, I think, that Arizona can teach the country in terms of how to tackle this issue. And I think you're right, there is a good argument that there should be at least legal status for the DACA recipients, a pathway to citizenship that they have to walk on their own, because U.S. citizenship has value and they ought to be able to earn that citizenship. The door ought not be closed, but not swung open either. They've got to walk that on their own. But yeah, I think that's probably the sensible middle ground, and it's coming out of Arizona.
Yeah, Ruben, I hesitate to even say what I'm about to say next, because everyone listening, including you and I here, knows what the deal is. But I think you're right. In this case, Arizonans are pragmatic. I think they're moderate on this issue. They understand what the solution should be. Our politicians just don't have the incentive to get it done. And that's frustrating. And it's almost water cooler conversation at this point to just rehash the fact that Arizonans know the solution and our politicians don't listen. But it has to be said, right?
And Zach, there's another dimension to this very quickly, and that is the preaching in Arizona among white Republicans, and particularly in Maricopa County, is the state's being invaded. They're afraid of Mexicans, and they want you to be afraid of Mexicans. But white Democrats, people like Kyrsten Sinema and others, are also part of the problem, because they're afraid of Republicans. They're afraid of moderate voters. They're afraid of losing elections. And so this goes back to Janet Napolitano, by the way, you know, who's a perfect epitome of this. She was a terrible Homeland Security Secretary who dropped the hammer after being Arizona governor, where she declared a state of emergency on the Arizona border. So ambitious Arizona Democrats have long figured out how to duck this issue, or to throw in with the Sheriff Joe Arpaios of the world and become complicit in their crimes, oftentimes, literal crimes, in the case of Sheriff Joe. And that is terribly unfortunate, because there is a lack of leadership on immigration in Arizona. The Arizona Democrats have failed that constituency, And man, Zach, if there's one group of people out there that Arizona Democrats owe, it's Latinos, 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 without which all these folks would be out of a job. They'd have to go earn a real living like you and me.
Ruben Navarrete, you know, by the way, I didn't mention this before as we close here. Ruben Navarrete, one of the most widely read Latino columnists in the country, is now going to be a regular contributor on this program, especially going into August. We'll have you on for a segment to talk about the big issues of the day. And there's been very few times we've interacted or I've read your work or I've listened to you on the podcast or had you on the show, Ruben, where you haven't stood in the center and called out the left and the right, Democrats and Republicans, and made everyone a little bit uncomfortable. That's honestly why I'm grateful to have you on the program consistently. That's the style I try to bring. Let's be honest. Let's make everyone equally uncomfortable together. We have to talk about it. Your goal is not to make people angry, but to make people think, and sometimes that makes people angry. But hey, at least they're getting angry by thinking, and that's where I want to be. Ruben, I appreciate it. There might be an article on this later this week. Yeah, you're working on this for national syndication?
Right, for the Daily Beast. It's got me working on a piece on DACA, on the DACA ruling, and I appreciate you giving me a chance to talk through it here today.
Absolutely. We'll look for that out there. And Ruben, appreciate your time. We'll see you next week, and keep doing what you're doing. I appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Thanks, Zach.
Thank you, sir. Ruben Navarrete, a nationally syndicated columnist here on Tipping Point, speaking to a national issue and how it impacts the Tucson and Southern Arizona. Always try to do that. Tucson, when we come back tomorrow, we're going to talk with ASU President Dr. Michael Crow. The fall semester is just ahead. There's governor's executive orders about what that looks like. And then we'll talk about the latest state budget that was passed and what it means for ASU and higher education. We've got a great lineup of guests that is still coming together for this week. Some states, some national, some local, some metro. Keep it right here, both at 9 a.m. On your dial here, 10:30, The Voice, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. But also throughout the day, Hugh Hewitt coming up next. Bill Buckmaster after that with a political face-off. I think he's got the chairs of the Republican and the Democratic Party in studio for a Monday morning face-off. I will be listening. Sure to be interesting. But for now, Tucson, that does it here. Check out the podcast, KVY.com, Spotify, iTunes. You can find us there and catch up on anything you missed. Stay safe out there. Stay cool out there. And we'll see you on Tuesday, 9 a.m. Drive Time, Tipping Point with Zach Yenser. Take care.